Yo, what's up? This is ATG from Discrepancies, and I'm here to let you know about a huge show that we've got coming up on August 6th at Pops. $8 will get you in the door, and it's going to be us versus Inner Outlines as a dual season release show slash battle royale. We're going to be playing with our friends Ashlyn, our friends Apollo's daughter, and our friends with Forgetting January. So make sure you come out and have a great time with us. We're all going to be there and having a great time.
He's not me.
Hey everybody, Shane Presley here with Rock Paper Podcast to tell you about my friends over at Music Record Shop. Find them at 4191A Manchester Avenue, right over there in the heart of the Grove. They come out this Friday, and every Friday there's an all-new music happy hour going on. 10% off any purchase, and free beer from Four Hands Brewery. And of course, vinyl spinning and new records in store from Prince, Nina Simone, and much more. Hey, also, they have a lot of great live in stores on the weekends, Saturdays and Sundays, and this Saturday, July 23rd, live in store from the Langoliers and Brother Lee and the Leather Jackals, and then come out on Sunday, July 24th, Justin Johnson and Melinda Cooper. Live in-store performance. Both of those 2 to 4 p.m. So come out, grab some new music, check out some fine local music, check out the local music selection there on the shelves. And if you want to get any of your music in-store, please reach out and see how you can make that happen. Hey, follow them on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, musicrecordshop.com. This episode is sponsored by Game Trader 2 in St. Charles, Missouri. They wanted to tell you about Mo GameCon going on August 13th, and that'll be at Elks Lodge 330 in Afton, Missouri. Tickets will be $10 or $5 plus two canned goods. There will also be exclusive event t-shirts for sale, and vendors. Special guests include Adam Korelick of YouTube and the Rocket Punch Radio and Video Game Show podcast, and many others. There's going to be a one going on, and like I said, lots of great local vendors and competitions and all kinds of things. So if you're into gaming, come check it out. August 13th, 12 to 7 p.m. in Afton, Missouri. Visit mogamecon.com for more information and tickets. That's mogamecon.com.
Podcast is kind of like it's like a radio show that's not on the radio. It's on the internet. Does that make sense?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. That's also like my mom. It makes it sound more confusing, doesn't it? It sounds like this.
Hey, this is Frank Pettis. Thank you for listening to Rock Paper Podcast. Stay tuned for more good stuff.
everybody. Shane Presley here, Rock Paper Podcast, coming to you from St. Peter's, Missouri.
Yes, sir.
Hanging out with Frank Pettis.
How are you doing, man?
Welcome to the show.
Thank you. This is awesome.
Yeah, I'm excited, man.
Yeah, me too. I was a little nervous. I wasn't sure what we were going to be talking about. It's been such a hot minute since I've felt like I've been relevant, so this is kind of neat.
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't know. I think you'd be surprised at how many people are still huge fans of the music, you know? So, like, even though you might not be putting out current music today, like, people still really love a lot of the stuff you were a part of, so.
And that's absolutely awesome. It's very flattering to know that people still spin the stuff, and, you know, every once in a while I'll get an email about a certain song, and it's pretty neat to hear.
For sure, man. But. Yeah, I guess, go over some backstory here, get everybody caught up, though. For me, I was hanging out one day. A friend of mine gave me this Sick Love EP, and I started listening to it. She's like, hey, check this out. So I took it home and gave it a listen. And I think there was another local EP she gave me also. Anyway, but so I'm listening to that Sick Love EP, and I'm like, man, this is really good stuff. And then I'm like sitting here looking, waiting for a show to come up. And then there was like a Halloween show of some sort. And my friends Exit 714 were playing it. And I went to school with some of those guys. And so I was, you know, I was following them around whenever they played. I'd try to be there. And so I go to this show on Halloween, and I guess Sick Love had to drop off of that bill, so I was kind of bummed that never got to see him. And then, I got on Facebook, and I'm trying to get an idea of what's going on with the band, where what's happening, and then I guess there wasn't a lot of activity there, and so I was like, well, I don't know, maybe they got signed or something, maybe they're going to do an album or something, you know, who knows what happened, so. I kept being optimistic, and then all of a sudden, finally got out that the band had split up, and so that was a couple years ago, and then I end up meeting a guy named Gabe Stroop, and through his band, Skyburnt White, and then I realized that he was also the singer of Sick Love.
Yep.
And anyway, so Gabe's become one of my best friends now. A couple years later, we've been hanging out, and I meet Frank through that also. You guys recently did a 6x Silver reunion thing, did a couple of shows. So anyway, whenever it was kind of a really surreal moment, because like I said, those Sick Love songs really meant a lot to me, and like to sit there to listen to those, and then all of a sudden, I realize I'm hanging out with, you know, the singer and guitar player of Sick Love, and, you know, it was pretty cool, man.
So. Yeah, the whole Sick Love thing, I mean, that was like a shooting star. I mean, Gabe called me, God, it must have been, you know, fall of 2010. By January 2010, I was friends with a country artist named Matt Steele. I was writing for him during, like, the whole Copperview transition. And, you know, he owns part of Bird's Nest Lodge down in Steeleville. And I called him one day, and I was like, hey, I just need 3 days. We're going to write an album.
Yeah.
He's like, you're not going to write an album in 3 days. So I was like, we absolutely are going to write an album in 3 days. And Gabe Stroop, James Dill, Danny Siebert, and I went down to Bird's Nest Lodge on a Friday. By Saturday, we had 9 songs.
Yeah.
And by Sunday, we were rehearsing, and we just kind of took off for about a year and a half, and then it just kind of fizzled out. We never really broke up. We never really called it quits. We just kind of stopped playing. Gabe went to Skyburnt White Project, which, you know, is absolutely amazing. You know, that's his baby right there. You know, Danny kind of went the family route. James went the other way, and, you know, I just kind of sat and waiting, so... You know, it was really unfortunate because we had 9 or 10 other songs that were just as good as that EP than the 5 that we actually got recorded. So I was kind of disappointed to hear that we didn't get it together because who knows what would have happened. I mean, there's an A&R guy online right now that's asking about Breakdown and, you know, interested in that. And I'm not really sure what's going to happen with that, but I definitely plan on emailing him and seeing what he's interested in.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm definitely not in a position where I could just pack up and hit the road anymore like it was 10 years ago.
Yeah, you say you said Copperview as well. So you wrote I mean that band, you know, got hot real quick too.
And, yeah.
So you were part of the big early of that with writing that record and stuff.
Yeah, I was a part of that band for 2 years, and then, you know, due to, you know, me just trying to put too many things in front of it. You know, I was trying to make relationships work. I was trying to make school work and trying to make a band work. You know, they, you know, came to the determination that it wasn't just a right fit anymore. And this was about 2 weeks prior to the record being completely finished and released. So I had probably my most influential music time with that because, you know, Toby Picker was my musical partner. Like, when we got together, songs just kind of poured out. It was absolutely natural. I remember we started that band at like April 1st of 2007. In September, we were playing Point Fest.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that band took off so fast. The songs came so natural. That album was actually finished almost a year prior to even starting the recording. It just came down to finances and money. And then with the departure of myself, and then Toby went through some issues, and then him falling out, that band just kind of was a shooting star. I think it rose too fast, and you know, if I could go back, we'd definitely do it differently and slow down, because that was probably the most talented group I've ever been a part of. I mean, Sam Baker on vocals was absolutely amazing, Dave Kopp on bass, Jeremy Patterson on the drums, best drummer I've personally ever played with, and then Toby was just such a natural talent on guitar. It just kind of blended together and worked out well. Probably 8 of those 10 songs came together within less than 10-15 minutes.
Yeah, that's nuts, man.
It was awesome. I'd come in with a riff, Toby would follow up, and then Jeremy's like, hey, play that again. Dave would throw in an idea, and then 10 minutes later, Sam was in a corner writing down lyrics.
Right.
It was a really cool time, because that was probably less than a month or two after Six by Silver kind of fizzled out and departed as well. Mm-hmm. So I've been a part of some really cool stuff that I'm absolutely flattered to be a part of. And, you know, it kind of sucks that it all kind of ended the way it did. But, you know, looking back now, you know, just being a part of that and having those songs on record basically forever
right. Is
pretty awesome.
Yeah. I guess we'll go even back further. So then we got Six by Silver.
Yeah.
Which, so we, like we said, I was hanging with you guys, you and Gabe and Jason in Columbia, Missouri. We did a reunion type show up there, acoustic thing, and it was just a lot of fun just to get to hear some of those songs again. And then you guys did a little bit of Sick Love in the Middle, and for me, like, that was, you know, like I said, that was a real treat. Gabe kind of gave me a heads up on that was going to happen, and then but I was just like, I was as close as I've got to see those songs live, so like it was pretty awesome to get to sing along with you know, Breakdown and Avalanche and stuff. So
yeah,
but yeah, so Six by Silver, this was one I wasn't as familiar with until the reunion thing you guys did. So, I guess you guys play quite a bit here in St. Charles County and things too. Apparently, some people will tell me stories about like, you guys had stickers like all over town and stuff.
Yeah, we actually got in trouble for that. Oh, and yeah. The funny thing is, we didn't put up a single sticker.
Yeah.
I mean, they were littered throughout St. Charles County on like major intersections on the physical street lamps. How they got there, I have no idea.
Yeah.
You go through neighborhoods around 94 and Jungerman and Harvester and Mid Rivers, there's still one at the intersection of Cave Springs and Highway 70 that's literally on the red light. And, you know, this was back in 2005, 2006 when that record was released. And we sold out of stickers our very first show back at Mississippi Nights. That's how long ago this was.
Yeah.
And, you know, we got a call from, you know, the police department about vandalism. And, you know, they were trying to hold us responsible. But we never put them up. So they kind of just lost hope on that. But, you know, that was so long ago. Those bring back some good memories to hear those phone calls and bring that band up. Because I started that band with Jason back actually in 2003. So fall of 2003, you know, one of my buddies met Jason at a bar and said, hey, this guy's a singer. He's currently in a band, but you can give him a call. And I was like, well, cool. I'll give him a call, no problem. A few months later, his band broke up. He calls me back, and it's like, who is this? I was like, my name's Frank, and you are going to be the singer to my next band. And he was kind of taken back at my confidence and was like, well, how do I know you can even play? I was like, well, give me 30 minutes. Drove up to Hazelwood, where he was still living with his mom, and the rest is kind of history. We put the band together with Andy Prinster. Again, Toby Picker was in that band. There's a drummer named Brian Asada who didn't last with us very long, but then Jeff Hall took his spot, who's still very much involved in the music scene. And it was one of those like perfect storms. And then Jason had a connection through Green Wheel, and we met Ziggy. Ziggy took us down to Memphis, and that's when the ball got rolling. When we were in Memphis, we met Malcolm Springer, who ended up producing our first record. And all of this, I was still under the age of 20. So it was absolutely incredible in a whirlwind, and just everything was just incredible. And the songs that we were putting out were amazing, and 15 to 20 of them never made the record, never made a second record. And the water just got too muddy, and it kind of tore the band apart with too many hands in the pot and management trying to control us, and you know, the record producer, you know, over-promising, under-delivering. And you know, I think that, you know, money and drama and everybody's personal needs were so short-sighted that it kind of fell apart. You know, Toby lost his patience with Jason. Jason was living the rock star life and didn't want to put in the work at the time. And then when the work did come in, it was a little too late. And, you know, then Andy backed out and Jeff backed out and went with Andy and started Redwater Revival. There's a lot of bands that offshot from this.
Yeah.
Copperview birthed because of the 6x7, Redwater Revival birthed because of it. Jason moved to Columbia and still held up the 6x7 name. Just wasn't ever the same. And, you know, when we tried doing the reunion show, I mean, the stars just didn't align. I mean, we had that historic rainfall where we sold 90% of the tickets and we had 17 people show up. Mm-hmm. It was just kind of a brutal realization. And you know, that period, if we could have gone back, took more control of ourselves, more made it more focused on the music. I mean, we toured the West Coast in 15 to 20 different states in a matter of 2 weeks. And it was, you know, when you're 21 years old, you think, oh, that's what we have to do. And we really didn't. We could have just focused on ourselves. And
right.
It was a shame that it ended the way that it did.
Yeah, I think, I mean, obviously you guys aren't alone there. There's so many great bands that had incredible talent and songs and all this, but you start getting more people involved, you know, labels, management, and everything else. It just complicates things, and that's kind of, well, you know, especially in that time. Like, I think today we have a lot more bands that can successfully do it on their own. You know, it's like
right.
There's a lot of bands that are just doing it the independent route. You know, trying to do it all self-funded and things. You got Kickstarters and whatever, the different crowdfunding avenues and things. You got people that can help support the bands that they believe in and keep them going. And it's just so, I think it's cool to see that, you know, again, it's more of a DIY route. You know, bands can just make the records and put them out on tour and do everything on their own without having to complicate things.
Yeah, and we came in at a weird time, too, because we came in right at the end of the popularity of the CD, right at the beginning of the increase of, like, back then, hell, it was Napster and iTunes, where people weren't really buying albums anymore, so record labels weren't even sure what to do with you.
Yeah.
I mean, we had a lot of people knocking on the door, but nobody pulling the trigger. And, you know, we just tried doing it ourselves at a time where it just wasn't efficient enough, and I think if we would have stuck with it another year, I think the outcome would have been much different. Mm-hmm. You know, and same with Copperview. If we would have focused, or especially myself, if I would have focused on the long term rather than the short term, than now, I mean, it would have been completely different. My last show was actually the show where us and Cabo opened up for Stone Temple Pilots, and that there was record companies there, and they decided to go with Cabo rather than us, and that was the last show that I personally played with them. And you know, a couple weeks later, we had the fallout, and that was history.
Yeah.
So, you know, if, you know, 2020 isn't, you know, hindsight's 2020, right, especially looking back, but, you know, I think everything happens for a reason, and, you know, I know Cop of You played their last show at the Ink Spot last summer, and, you know, it's sad to see that those guys aren't any going on, because, you know, those guys had so much talent, and we were different. We weren't the typical St. Louis band. We brought back the dirty rock and roll, and we're kind of careless and fun, and the shows were loud, and the shows were just raw. Nothing was really rehearsed as far as a live show goes, and I thought that was, like, Copperview's greatest attribute to the local scene, because we weren't the same as everybody else. And
right,
when we met with like Donnie Fandango from The Point, and he thought that we were already a signed established band, he had no idea that we were from St. Louis because we sounded that different.
Yeah.
And then when we told him, no man, we're still local, we're just playing at the Library, we're playing at Pops, we're playing at the Pageant, and we were opening up for huge bands and playing at the Verizon Wireless Theater at the time, multiple Point Fest, and then, you know, I think they played with Sammy Hagar, and we did the Stone Temple Pilots gigs and the Chevelles and the Breaking Benjamin. I mean, that was awesome.
For sure.
Not many local bands say that they were invited to do that. So if we could have gone back and just probably, I wish I would have lived in the moment more with it. And because looking back, it was absolutely incredible and still gives me the chills thinking about playing in front of 25,000 people.
Yeah, man.
And
crazy.
Yeah, it was just unbelievable, you know, being 22, 23 years old and playing in front of that many people that appreciated your music and actually left being fans of it and wanting more. Nothing was like it.
Mm-hmm. So so I guess that was probably the peak of the everything was right there, those moments, those Point Fests and things. And
yeah, I think that they probably peaked shortly after the album came out, since there was so much buzz about it, and they had that great music video, and I know that they were working with the guys from Three Doors Down on a follow-up record and trying to, you know, release on an independent or major label. I think that, but those shows were like the ultimate, because we went literally from a storage unit to that within a week.
Right.
And the gentleman that was representative, Darren Hall, had such a huge footprint in the music scene, and he really made it all happen as far as the Point Fest and the major shows and the Live Nation gigs that we were playing. He, you know, I, to this day, I thank him for every second he gave us, because he was really instrumental in making that happen for us, which we didn't have in any other band. He saw something, he heard something, and he felt like other people needed to hear it, and he wasn't in it for himself, which was what the fallout from Six by Silver was. We had management that was trying to be rock stars and living that dream, whereas Darren was just wanting good music released and the best of the best out there.
Yeah.
So if I could see him or run into him again, I would definitely, you know, thank him for everything he's done for that.
For sure. Yeah. I mean, that's sort of what I'm trying to do with this is just trying to showcase as many different very talented locals that I can on here, just to let people know there's still great music in this town. Just people out there hustling, trying to make it. Just they kind of need that little pushing, you know, to get to the next level and stuff. So I'm trying to help out what I can. But
well, you're doing an awesome job, because St. Louis has always had the problem with, if you're local, you're kind of like black labeled. It seems like, oh, you're just a local band. Well, everybody starts out as just a local band. But, I mean, there's been some other cities, like even Louisville and Nashville and Memphis, when we were with Six by Silver and Copperview. And, I mean, those cities, it just felt different there. You were a local band and you were doing something unique. At the time when In the Clear was still around in Louisville, I mean, they had a following. They'd have religiously 1,500 people at a show. Didn't matter what day of the week, didn't matter where. They were like diehards, and they'd go to bat for you. And it just seems like that's lost in some cities. And, you know, the fans that did follow us around, I mean, they were absolutely diehard. And I thank them for every second that they gave us and every penny they spent on our band. And hopefully that what you're doing is going to bring more light to people and expose more people, because St. Louis has one of the greatest music scenes I've personally ever seen. I mean, you like heavy metal? Got it.
Sure.
You like jazz? We got it. Rock and roll? Got it. Blues? Got it. Indie rock? Got it.
Yeah.
Not many cities can say they have that much of a blend of music as we do here. And
yeah.
It sucks that I don't get out much as much as I do, but you know, every time I'm online or social media, I see a new band that you've interviewed, click on their link, and I give it a listen. So the exposure that you're giving these people and these bands and these groups and these comedians is absolutely amazing.
Yeah. Well, thanks, man.
No problem.
Yeah. I'm glad to... I don't get a lot of feedback from it, so it's hard to really know how many people it's reaching. Like, I know I do... Obviously, doing the show, I get numbers of, you know, downloads and things like that. So I know the numbers are going up, and that's always a plus. But, yeah, like I said, I don't really ever get much people like... oh, hey, thanks for doing that, you know, like sharing that band, I like that stuff or whatever. So it's, I know people are listening, but it's just nice to know that actually it's affecting, you know, making, doing something good. So
yeah, I mean, because people in my situation where, you know, now that I have a family and two Rugrats and a wife running around, and like, I just can't go pick up a magazine and say, hey, I'm boom, it's a Tuesday, I'm leaving.
Yeah.
I have to resort to the links that you're providing
sure. To
find something worth my time and worth going out and spending my money on, and I think that's awesome.
Yeah, I've been trying to, like I said, trying to help out the best I can. Those lists seem to be making a difference, too. People seem to like knowing that where all the shows are in town and
yeah.
and stuff. So, yeah, man, I'm a huge fan of everybody in town of St. Louis music, and it's exciting to see some things are, you know, things are happening. Like there's people making a difference in the right. in the scene. So hopefully we'll have some of those Copper Views and Six by Silvers and Sky, Sick Loves again, and you know, these bigger rock and roll bands in town. And I mean, we still have a, you know, there's a lot of guys. Like I said, there's guys out there doing it right now that are. And it's exciting to watch, and hopefully continue the success. But
well, if we can convince Dylan and Danny to get together, and Gabe can take a break, I know he's super busy. I would not be opposed to finishing up what Sick Love started, because, like I said, we never technically broke up.
Right.
We just kind of all went our separate ways and let the album do what it did. And,
yeah.
I mean, it's still getting people downloading it today on iTunes. So
I've been talking about it quite a bit, trying to. I've introduced it just last night. I was telling some friends that I was coming over here to talk to you, and they obviously know Gabe from Skyburn White, but they didn't realize that he did some stuff with Sick Love. So I introduced him to that, and they were digging it. So
yeah, I think Gabe's vocals and lyrics on that Sick Love album were absolutely incredible. I mean, like I said, that album was so just natural. Like, we didn't try. It just kind of came out, and, you know, being put in the middle of Bird's Nest Lodge in the dead of winter where there's nowhere to go, and we were just with each other and making the music was something that, you know, looking back on was absolutely rare and incredible.
Yeah.
And it's kind of similar to the closest experience I had to that was back in 03 when we went to Memphis the first time, where we did nothing besides write music. That was it. We barely ate. We didn't drink anything. We didn't do anything other than play music and sleep. And whatever came out, and it was absolutely awesome. So hopefully we get to do that again now that we're 5 years removed from it, and see what comes out, see if the music's any more mature or what. Because I know that everybody, since Sick Love has ended, has now kids. James has got one. Danny's got one. Gabe just had his first.
Yeah.
You know, I got two. So I'd kind of be interested to see what happens.
Yeah, some dad rock band.
Yeah, rocking out lullabies.
Yeah. well, you want to, excuse me, do you want to do something from
sure. What do you, what would you like to hear?
Oh, I'll take any of it.
You want to hear something new? You want to hear something old?
Sure. Yeah, well, let's, you want to give them a taste of some of that Sick Love we were talking about?
Sure. Here's Avalanche. Mm-hmm. much about what we can do with the acoustic.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, that was an awesome song. That was one of my favorites to write because it was so complex and so dark at the same time. And the downfall kind of to Sickle was we didn't have another other guitar player, and there were so many ideas and melodies running through my head that at the time Gabe wasn't playing guitar. Now he's a stud. So yeah. Going back, we could layer it up and actually get out what we needed to. There was an awesome guitar solo at the end with, you know, Dill and Gabe playing harmonies over the top of it. It was pretty awesome.
Yeah, man. Yeah, yeah. Well, I don't know. Maybe, who knows? Maybe next time we'll be talking about reunion or something.
That would be awesome.
Yeah.
That would be awesome.
So, obviously you've never, stopped playing guitar. You're, still always working, edit, writing and stuff. And
yeah, I've been writing a lot on the acoustic guitar, and, you know, my dream job would be, hey, I just want you to write music for whatever it may be. I just want you to write music and riffs. I could do that all day long. So, I mean, that would be ideal. I probably have about 15 to 20 things started. Nothing's ever finished, obviously, because sure. It all depends on who you're working with, the vocals, the type of band, you know, what the content's going to be about, where you want to go with it, how complex you want to be. I got everything from classical to grunge to rock to, you know, basic, you know, chord structures with backwood blues kind of stuff. Yeah. I haven't actually plugged this riff into the electric guitar yet, but I'm sure it'd be pretty dirty. But this is one I wanted to show Gabe again, because I know that he was interested in this riff when I showed it to him a couple years ago. That never came about. So I got a ton of those ideas. I can go on for hours.
Right.
Just don't want you to run out of tape.
Yeah. Yeah. That's cool, man. I do have like obviously studio musician guys and stuff. You ever think about doing something like that?
Wouldn't even know how to break into it.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I'm currently working a full-time job right now, and I just I don't know how to break into it, what hours they would be, what they're looking for. But if there's anybody out there that knows how to get a hold of anybody or interested in writing original riffs and original songs to sell, I'm all about it.
Would you ever consider getting back out and playing regularly? Or
Locally, I would love to.
Yeah.
You know, I guess it would just have to, you know, depend on the band, the group, you know, the situation. I've got to do what's best for my family now, so I couldn't just pack up and go on a 20-city tour and hope for $10 a night like we used to, you know? Because, you know, back when Six by Silver was touring, we made just enough money to eat, sleep, and get to the next location before we were dead broke again, and then we do it all over. So, it, I mean, it just depends. Now that I'm in my early 30s, I don't necessarily know if I have the stamina to start over.
Right.
But, you know, I'm willing to entertain anything that may come up. And like I said, I would love to get, you know, Six by Silver, Copperview, or even Sick Love back together for a bunch of local shows and just have some fun with it because, you know, that's what it's all about. I mean, this is kind of my therapy. Playing guitar and, you know, coming home and hanging out with the kids and then playing guitar for them, and I don't know, it's just different now.
Yeah. How do the kids take to it? Are they getting interested in it at all?
Yeah, my 3-year-old, he's definitely interested in it. He's a lefty, so I'd have to do a little bit of work on a couple of guitars to switch it around for him. And you know, my daughter is going to be 10 months old here in a couple weeks.
Right.
And, you know, every time I get it out or play, she's like staring at it in my lap and, you know, bobbing her head with it. Yeah. So, you know, I'll have a little group of musicians. Maybe they'll be the next Jackson 5 without all the chaos and the drugs. But, you know, I love their reaction when I play. I love seeing how interested they are. And, you know, if they want to pursue this as a dream, I'm going to support them 100%.
Yeah. I was at Tower Grove Park food truck Friday a little while ago, and my friend Emily Wallace and Jim Peters were up there doing like a acoustic duo cover stuff, and they sprinkle in a couple originals but there was this little boy, had to be, you know, 3 or something, barely walking, almost, you know, still use he would get up there, and he would run up to the, like, towards the where they're playing, and he was like, and his the mom would, you know, kind of wringle him back up, and then she, like, when they were on set break, though, I overheard her come up, and she's like, oh, he's just infatuated with guitars, like, you know, he just wants, you know, he wants to see it, wants to touch it and stuff, so, like, she's like, you care if he looks at your guitar, and, like, you know, they're like, oh, of course not, you know, but, like, I was like, that's awesome, though, like, you know, that she needs to embrace that support, you know, like, whatever that is, like, if he's already that interested in guitars, like, let him, you know, run with it, so...
Yeah, I hope that they do something musically. I inherited a nice piano from my grandparents when she moved out of her house, and I'm hoping they, you know, one day have it a house where I can actually put the piano in it, because right now it's at my in-laws, and you know, let them play it. And I got, you know, 6 guitars behind me and one couple more in that closet right there that I never use that I'd like to pass on down to him. So, or her, either one's fine.
Yeah. I obviously don't have children right now, but I have quite a bit of a record collection I've already started on my own, and that's kind of the thing, like, you know, for you it's passing down guitars, but someday I hope to pass down my record collection of all these great albums that have, you know, been a part of my life, and then hopefully you know, my kids will appreciate that whenever you know, to pass on. So yeah, so I think about that even when I'm buying records now. It's like, you know, someday I'll plan to give this to my kids or something.
Yeah, that's why I can't sell any of those.
Right.
Cause, you know, the Stratocaster right there, I dedicated to my late grandfather, and that was his last signature ever on that guitar, so that's not going anywhere. And then, you know, a couple of those were a gift, and then the Les Pauls I paid with my hard-earned Pizza Hut money back in the day, so... Yeah. And I worked pretty hard to get those guitars and the stuff that I have and the equipment that I used, and I'd like to see them take care of it too, but we'll see if they're interested.
Yeah. Is there a particular favorite of yours between with guitars. I mean,
I'm a huge Les Paul guy.
Yeah.
My first guitar that I ever purchased with my own money was I got a pretty neat looking Manhattan Blue limited edition Les Paul back here, and I remember working overtime every day of the week for almost a month straight to try to, you know, afford that, because, you know, when you're 18 years old, $2,200 is a lot of money.
Sure.
So sold a few things, like electronics that I wasn't using, and, you know, worked twice as hard that I ever did to play that guitar, and I bought that in 04, about a week before we went to Memphis, and that, you know, I wrote every single 6x Silver song on that guitar, and every song that started the Copperview, the era, on that guitar. And when that one started getting a little beat up and I was afraid to take it on the road, I bought a Silver Burst, and my two Les Pauls are my Golden Goose, and I got the SG over there that's really good for recording and, you know, some live shows, but I'm definitely a Les Paul guy.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Yeah, they, I don't know a lot about gear, but yeah, I mean, obviously, I think there's quite a bit of people that are swear by Les Pauls and stuff, so.
Yeah, and that back in 2011, I got introduced to Paul Reed Smith, and that guitar is so nice that I'm afraid to use it live. You get a scratch or a ding on it, you know, you're going to cry.
Yeah,
so
sure.
I'd rather use the Paul Reed Smith for recording and things like that, but the Les Paul's my road horse.
Sure. So. I mentioned at Jim Peters playing that show, but I sat with him just the other day, and he was telling me about, he used to be like a rare wood dealer. I don't know. I didn't even know that was a thing, but
something for everybody.
Yeah, but he met a guitar maker of some sort, and the guy's like, "Hey, I would love to make you a guitar." And so Jim knew what woods he wanted to use, and brought in all these rare woods to him, and he handcrafted a one of a kind acoustic guitar for him and stuff. And
that's awesome.
Yeah, so it's he didn't get I didn't hear him play it, but I can imagine it's got to be pretty incredible to have, you know, to have that hands on in that process of crafting your own guitar like that and stuff. And
yeah, I always dreamed that I'd have like a signature series guitar, but, you know, maybe someday, right?
Yeah, sure. Hey, never too late. I look at guys like, I mean, you know, like, again, we're just in our 30s, but like, you look at guys like Charles Bradley or whatever, you know, he's getting started like in his 60s and singing, and now he's got a big career going and stuff like that. Like, it's just, it's pretty inspiring. I mean, I know obviously there's not a lot of rock bands getting signed up in their 30s or 40s or whatever, but
yeah.
It is, it's never too late to get out there and do it, though, man.
No, and so, you know, another band that I had the opportunity to play with quite a bit during my Copperview days was Shamans.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Shamans is in their mid-30s, and
sure,
they're just now blowing up like crazy.
Right.
They've been a band since 1999.
Yeah.
I'm surprised that it's taken them this long, but those guys are the definition of hard work. I mean, that album is absolutely incredible front to back,
mm-hmm,
and, you know, they have kids in high school.
Yeah.
So...
yeah, those guys are just road dogs, man. They they've grinded for years on the road just trying to make it, and it's finally paying off, man.
I hope they have a long career and just shows people exactly what Missouri rock and roll is.
Mm-hmm.
And those guys, you know, never stopped. Lineup changes after lineup changes after the same group of guys just hammering it out is awesome.
Yeah.
So,
and Nate's vocals are just insane. That guy.
Yeah.
Got one of my favorite rock vocals I've ever heard, and then yeah, just a super talented band. If you don't know Shaman's Harvest and you're listening to this, you need to go check out that record.
Yeah, get out from underneath your rock and go listen to the last album front to back. It's amazing.
Yep. Yeah. Hopefully, the trick is, you know, I mean, I'm sure they got another one ready to go, but the trick would be to follow that up. You know, like, if they can match that fire, you know, try to come up with another.
Yeah.
Another great record. So
I don't think those guys will have that problem. I bet they've had it written for years.
I'm sure. Yeah, that's because that, even Smoking Hearts and Broken Guns didn't come out right away. That they had with Nate had that throat surgery stuff.
Yeah.
So they had to sit on it for a while before they.
It was a little over a year, I believe.
Yeah,
which is crazy. I couldn't keep that a secret.
Yeah,
If I had an album looking like that in my back pocket, I'd be here. Go take a listen. Take a listen, yeah. Please.
Yeah. So, but yeah, hopefully they get keep going and everything. But yeah, man, I wanted to say thank you so much though for doing this. Hey. This was a lot of fun to get to hang out and talk for a while and get to share some of these stories. Like I said, that bird's nest story, that was cool, man. I had no idea. So that was
That was 3 days of absolute just creativity gushing out of that little 800 square foot cabin that we were in. And you know, I remember Danny having to climb over his drum set to get to his bed, and I was climbing over amplifiers to get to the couch. And it was awesome. If we could do that again and come out with the same result, I definitely would in a heartbeat.
Sure, yeah, man. I think there's a lot of people out there that would love that to happen too. So I'm one of them. So hopefully see what happens, man. See what the future holds for all of us. So.
Well, hopefully you get to see me perform again with somebody, because it's definitely still my passion, even though, you know, family has taken priority.
Sure.
And, you know, it's something that I would love to do, but like I said, hopefully that door opens and we'll see what happens.
Yeah. So yeah, if you're interested in helping Frank get some studio gigs or anything, in that sense, look him up.
Let me know.
Yeah. So thanks, Frank. This has been awesome, man.
Dude, anytime, Shane. I appreciate what you're doing with the local scene, and hopefully, like I said, and when you originally reached out to me, that this is absolutely an honor to be a part of this, because I think you know, this grassroots style that we're going with, I think someday people are going to have to come to your studio to do this. And hopefully this takes off for you and you become like a staple in St. Louis.
I hope so. Like I said, man, if I can hang out talking to rock stars every day, like, that'd be cool with me. So I'm down for it. So, I'm just riding the wave, man. We'll see where this thing takes me. I'm just having a good time.
Well, hopefully it's a long wave to ride, my friend.
Yeah, sure. Well, thank you, Frank.
And no problem.
I'll see you, man.
See ya.
In every place I run to, on my own. Your philosophy, it seems to me that you've already come and gone. You're leaving me. Only time will tell the words you sell if they will hold up on their own. You're leaving. Philosophy, it seems to me that